Parashas Pinchas, one of the things that it speaks about is how Moshe, knowing, of course, that he's reaching the end of his leadership and the end of his life, asks Hashem to appoint a new leader for the Jewish people. And straight after that, we have the story of the communal sacrifices that had to be brought on a daily basis, as well as on the special occasions, Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, and the various festivals. We're going to look at a Rashi, where Rashi comments on the opening line of that story of the communal sacrifices and the juxtaposition to the story of Moshe asking Hashem to appoint a leader, and we'll see how it is that Rashi has a very unique insight into this particular passage. Right at the beginning of going through all of the communal sacrifices, Rashi quotes the opening line, Tzav es b'nei Yisrael, command, instruct the Jewish people. Umefaresh, and he comments as follows. Ma'amul amayla, what's immediately prior to this? What was the context of the passage just before this? Yifkoid Hashem. That Moshe said to Hashem, please appoint a leader to take over from me. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem replied to him, Ad sh'atom etzaveni al bonai, tzavei es bonai olai. That before you tell me and instruct me what I should do for my children, I want you to instruct my children what they should do for me. Moshel chulei, and then he gives a parable, a metaphor, which we'll come back to shortly. So the point is, Hashem says, hey, one second, before you start instructing me, how's about you tell the people what they need to do? So we need to understand what is so difficult to understand by that phrase, instruct the Jewish people, that Rashi feels he's got to explain it. I mean, instruct the Jewish people, that's pretty straightforward. What's bothering Rashi? And if you're going to say because he finds the terminology here slightly unusual, usually it says, Vaydaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. Hashem spoke to the Jewish to Moshe and he said, tell them to Daber El Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, etc. Here it says Tzav. Tzav means to instruct. Maybe that's what's caught Rashi's attention, the unusual usage of the word Tzav. Harei kvar pirsha Rashi b'reish parshas Tzav uvahadgasha. That word Tzav already appeared long ago in the second portion, the second parsha of the third book of the Torah, Vayikra, Tzav. And there Rashi explained the word Tzav. It's not the first time it's appeared. What did he say over there? Ein Tzav el l'shoin zirus miyad el adoros. Hanish b'chol mokim ein pirush acher l'tzav. Rashi says very clearly that the word Tzav means to encourage people, to urge people, you know, kind of to get them moving. And it always applies immediately and for the long term, over the course of generations. So Rashi has already explained the word Tzav. That cannot be what has caught his attention here and prompted him to comment. So yesh meforshim, the Rashi bo levara smichas de parsha zoy de parsha kidemes yifkoid Hashem. Many of the commentaries say, well, what Rashi wants to discuss is how this section flows from the previous section. The previous section was Moshe speaking to Hashem and saying, please appoint a successor. And now Hashem responds by saying, please tell the Jews to bring communal sacrifices. And that would make sense because Rashi actually says this in his commentary. He says, what was stated prior to this? What was stated? Moshe saying to Hashem, please appoint a successor. So on the face of it, according to all these commentaries, the flow works like this. Rashi says, okay, I saw in the previous section that Moshe requested that Hashem appoint a successor, and now we see that Hashem is saying, tell the Jews to bring offerings. So let's see, it must be a direct continuum. What's the direct continuum? Hashem says, because you want me to look after my children, I think it's appropriate that I first ask you to get your children to commit to me. But we're going to raise two questions initially on this. Avakasha leforish can be Rashi. It's difficult to say that that's what Rashi is explaining. Key for two reasons. Aleph, firstly, we're going to talk stylistically. If Rashi wants to juxtapose what we're reading now with what was stated before, we know that Rashi has done this numerous times, and he has a particular way that he does so, his particular lexicon that he uses, and he's not using those words here. Signain Rashi b'chiyotze bazeh, kishavol leforish shmichas parashas hu, lomo nismecho chulei. Usually, when Rashi wants to compare and juxtapose two paragraphs or two sections in the Torah, he usually uses the expression, Lama nismecha. Why was this placed in proximity to that? Or something similar. By the way, he actually uses that phrase in this parasha Pinchas itself, al hapasuk alei al harho avorim, where Hashem tells Moshe to go up onto Mount Avorim so he could see the land that they were going to go into, and he himself wouldn't. He says, lama nismecho lekan. There Rashi uses that expression. Why is that paragraph placed in proximity to the preceding paragraph? Likewise, Bereish Parashas Shlach, lama nismecho parash meragim, parashas miram chulei. At the beginning of Parashas Shlach, where Rashi wants to ask, why is the story of the spies juxtaposed with the story of Miriam speaking badly about her brother? He says, Lama nismecha. Why are they in proximity? Reish Parashas Baaloischa, Lama nismecha, Parashas Amnele, Parashas Anasim Chulei. Or the Parasha prior to that, Baaloischa, where Rashi wants to understand how come the instruction to Aaron to light the menorah is straight after the story of the 12 leaders of the Jewish people bringing sacrifices to inaugurate the Mishkan. There he also says, Lama nismecha. So, Vo'oid, and other examples, if Rashi wants to emphasize a juxtaposition, he usually uses the expression lama nismecha. Here he uses a different expression, ma amur lamaila, what was said prior. So therefore, it's not so clear that Rashi's primary goal here is to link the two portions. Moshe asking for a successor and Hashem saying bring sacrifices. It might be part of what he's explaining, but it doesn't sound like it's his primary objective in this commentary. Number two, the fact that these two portions are side by side is actually quite self-explanatory. The Jews have been in the desert for 40 years, and they haven't yet been instructed about these communal sacrifices, which apply on a daily basis and on special occasions. So it's obvious that now Hashem has to tell Moshe to tell the Jewish people, because this is it. This is the end of the Torah in the words of Hashem. We're right at the end of it. The fifth book of the Torah, Devarim, is Moshe in his own words, recapping the story. So it's no big surprise that Hashem is now telling them about these mitzvahs, these offerings, because as the Mishnah says, Imloi Achshav Emosai, if you don't do it now, when are you going to do it? Moshe is reaching the end of his tenure. So if Hashem does not now give him these instructions, it's never going to happen. Therefore, it doesn't seem right that Rashi is bothered by the juxtaposition of the last piece about asking for a successor and this piece where Hashem instructs the sacrifices. His wording doesn't indicate that, and the truth is, it's quite self-explanatory why Hashem should tell it to him now. Gam, okay, so that can't be the explanation, right? That's not what's bothering Rashi. So maybe you'll say what's bothering Rashi is that the verse says, Tzav instruct, ve'omarta and tell them. Maybe that's what bothers him. Why is it a double expression? The truth is, you cannot explain that what Rashi is bothered by over here is the double expression. Why does it say tzav and then says v'omarto? Which would seem to indicate that one of those expressions is unnecessary. Either remove the word tzav instruct or remove the word v'omarto tell. There are three reasons why that cannot be what bothers Rashi. Key, number one. If that was what bothered Rashi, why is there a double expression in the verse? Then somewhere in his commentary, he should have referenced the extra word, ve'omarta, which he doesn't. If he doesn't mention it, it's incredibly unlikely that that's what he's talking about. Number two. In the final parasha of the fourth book of the Torah about Midbar, Parashas Maseh, we're also going to see this doubled expression, tzav, instruct, ve'omarta, and tell. And Rashi doesn't say anything about it there, not a word. That indicates that Rashi is not bothered by that so-called double expression. Number three, the truth is, there are many times in the Torah where it appears that an instruction from Hashem via Moshe to the Jewish people is used with a double expression. Daber, speak to the people, va'omarta, and tell them. And Rashi never comments. So it can't be that Rashi wants to know primarily why this section is in proximity to the preceding section where Moshe asks for a successor, nor can it be that what Rashi is bothered by primarily is the double expression, Tsa Veomarta, because he doesn't even seem to allude to it, or even in his other commentaries talk about the doubled language. So therefore, Muchach Loimer, Ki Al Derech HaPshat Ein Ze Kushya, V'Kefer HaLoshen U'L'Chizik HaTzivoi V'Chayotze B'Zeh, we have to conclude that on the face of it, the doubled expression is just to highlight or strengthen how important this particular instruction is. Now, before we can start to understand what Rashi says, or what motivates Rashi to say it, let's go to the next part of the Rashi, which we haven't yet described, which is where he brings a parable to illustrate his point. Rashi mamshach b'firushay Moshe levas melech shoyis nifteres mina oilam v'yis mafkedes levay la'al boneo v'chulei kideyuse b'sifri. Now what Rashi says over here, the wording is fascinating. Rashi says that this is comparable to a metaphor of a princess who was going to pass away and instructed her husband how he should look after their children, etc. In other words, Rashi does not complete the quotation. And then he says, as is stated in the Sifri, as the source. So the Eine move, and that immediately raises some questions for us, a whole bunch of questions. Number one, what about this metaphor, this parable, helps us understand Moshe's case better? Moshe's saying, you know, I want a successor, please, please appoint a successor. And Hashem is saying, and I want dedication from the Jewish people. Please ensure they're dedicated. Okay, we get it. We understand the conversation. We understand each of the two sides. And we understand how each one of them was going to affect what they wanted. Why do I need a mashal, a parable, in order to explain that? But the chayra adraba nimshal move on yosem our mashal. In fact, when you read the verses at face value, they actually seem to make more sense than the parable does. The parable is fraught with problems. Number one, the fact that Moshe asks Hashem, please appoint an appropriate successor, obviously you get why Moshe wants that. Obviously, Shaharei Medubar Bemino Yimane Kol Am Yisrael, Sheyaseva Kol Echad Ve'echad Lefi Daitoi. As Moshe has already indicated from his own experience, that to be a leader of the Jewish people means you have to understand the people, you have to relate to them, you have to deal with their particular nuances and idiosyncrasies. So he says, please appoint an appropriate successor. It's a very valid request. So there we're talking about a leader, and the mashal parable that he brings is talking to somebody about their own children. Okay, so number one, Shehem Asemi Spar. When you talk about leaders, you're talking about a leader over millions of people. You're talking about a father? How many children can there be already? 10 children? A dozen children? How many could there be already? That you have to say, please make sure that you know how to look after them. And also, Shehem Bonim, Veni Murchukul Kachal Kol Ponim Shiyav Zokh Shiftu Aloy Albonav. You can understand Moshe speaking to Hashem and saying, please ensure that the leader is a good leader. Because a leader doesn't have a vested interest necessarily in the people. But a father? How can you compare that to a father? A woman is telling her father, please look after your children. What? You expect anything less of a father? So what Moshe says to Hashem appears to be easier to understand than what this woman is telling her husband. Secondly, Maimer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Tzavez Bonai Olai, move on. We can definitely understand Hashem's response. Moshe, instruct the people that they should be dedicated to me. Oh, we definitely understand that. We know the history of the Jews. We know how many times they rebelled or ignored or questioned or complained or transgressed. We know. When Hashem tells Moshe, please tell the Jews to be dedicated, there's good reason for that. But in the parable that he brings, where the father responds to the princess and says, while you're telling me to look after the children, how's about you tell the children to respect me, to look after me? You need to tell them that? You need to tell them? Still with this parable, there's a few nuances about how Rashi presents it that are also very interesting to us. Remember that Rashi's language choices are always very specific, including when he puts in a set and etc., when he quotes a source. So we have to look at all of these things, three areas in particular. Number one, Rashi matik medibra sifri moshe levas melech shoysen ifteres men olivois mafkedes levaila abonea chulei umosif kidisa besifri. Rashi only tells us the first half of the moshel, and then he says etc., and then he says as written in the sifri. Amimonafshach. Either way you look at this, it seems a strange presentation. If the reason Rashi tells us where this comes from the Sifri, is because he wants us to look in the Sifri and learn it properly, which is usually why Rashi quotes a source, because he wants us to consult the source. So if Rashi's intention is for us to look in the source, then Rashi could have just said, it's like the parable of the princess that is quoted in the Sifri. And then we would know, look in the Sifri, look for a parable of a princess, and study it. On the other hand, if Rashi wanted to spell out the full parable, he should have spelled out the full parable. But over here, Rashi's done neither. He's given us half the parable and a reference to the Sifri. So if his intention was to direct us to the Sifri, give the headline of the parable and the location. If his goal is to tell us the story, tell us the story. Rashi tells us half the story and sends us off to the Sifri. Why? So you have to conclude then that Rashi feels that the part of the parable that he has included is the key to understanding what's going on over here in the Torah. So we have to work out how. The second half of the mashal, what the response of the father is, apparently is not so fundamental to understanding this section. So we've got to work this out. Number two, Makoyer shel mashal ukidivrei Rashi besifri. Rashi himself says that he is quoting a parable from a predating book, the Sifri. Aval sham isa, when you look in the Sifri, it uses different wording to what Rashi uses. So Rashi's quoting, telling us where to look, telling us part of what it says, and the part of what it says, he doesn't even quote directly. Mashal chulei lemelech. So he says, in the Sifri, it says, this is a parable of a king. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says that it's a parable of bas melech, a princess. Shehoiso ishtoi, v'loi bas melech chulei. In the Sifri, it says there was a king whose wife, almost like the focus is on the king, even though the story is about the wife. His wife was going to pass away. Rashi skips the king and gets straight to not just a wife, but a bas melech, a princess, daughter of a king. So the original Sifri is the wife of a king, and Rashi is talking about the daughter of a king. So Rashi emphasizes that the status of the woman in the story is a princess, whereas the status of the woman in the story in Sifri is the wife of the king. And the status of the husband in Rashi's version is a husband without any rank. Whereas in the Sifri, the husband is a king. So that's a major shift. Why does Rashi make such a change? Okay, Rashi may have found, in fact, it's very likely that Rashi found another version of the Sifri, which is in these words. And why does Rashi, sure, he maybe found another version, and occasionally that was the case. Remember, things were transcribed by hand, and very often there were variations between one version and the next. So there could be a nuance, a word different here or there. Why didn't Rashi rather take the most commonly accepted version? How do we know it's most commonly accepted? Because that's the way it landed up in print eventually. Especially if he's trying to make a reference to Hashem, then the character in the story should be a king, because a king is always used as the character of a parable for Hashem. So you have to then conclude that the way that Rashi has worded it follows a version that is closer to the simplest understanding of the text, of the verses, and we have to understand how. Number three, Duvar Kama Pe'amim, we've discussed many times, the Rebbe says, Rashi Metzayim Mekomoker Lefi Rusha, any time that Rashi quotes a source, because typically Rashi does not quote sources. He only gives us the relevant information to be able to understand the simple understanding of the verse. Whenever he does quote a source, and he doesn't just say our sages, but he actually tells us which book to look at, usually Rashi does this because the same concept might appear in a different source with slight variations, and those variations will not be best suited to the pshat, to the simple understanding of the verses. So that's why Rashi wants us to know where he's quoting from, because this specific version is the one that's best suited to the simple text. Or occasionally, Rashi will refer us to a source, because if you're a very good student, you might have a question, and he's not going to answer the question, but he'll at least reference you to the source so you can find the answer to the question. So we have to ask ourselves, in this particular case, what's Rashi alluding to by telling us where to look to find the source of this particular parable? The Medrash Tanchuma also has a parable on this conversation that is very similar to the Sifri's parable, and we're going to look at the differences. This is how the Medrash Tanchuma says it. Let's use a parable. What could this be compared to? Lemelech shenasa isha, to a king who married a woman, v'haya la shushvin, and she had like a shushvin. A shushvin is somebody who would accompany her, somebody who was like a chaperone, let's call it. She had a chaperone. Kol zman shamelech koyes al ishtoi, ha-shushvin mefayes chulei. Any time that this king would get angry at his wife, the chaperone would step in and he'd placate him and settle things. When this chaperone was going to pass away, he approaches the king and says, look, I'm not going to be around anymore to protect her. Please do me a favor, your royal highness, please think about your wife. So the king says, why are you telling me that I should be conscious of my wife? Tell my wife she should be conscious of me. So you see that the Medrash Tanchuma, to relate to the conversation between Moshe and Hashem, uses almost the same parable, but there are slight differences. King and a wife, and the question is not about how to treat the children, it's how to treat the wife, because the person who used to always step in and make peace in the home is the one who's no longer going to be there. Lefizem akam loy medamasha zeshapatan chuma bo Rashi lishloil bekosva kidisa besifri. Now that implies, if Rashi wants to direct us to the Sifri, that means that Rashi Dafka does not want to invoke the mashal, the parable used in the Medrash Tanchuma. Which obviously makes us start to wonder, why is Rashi convinced that the parable in the Sifri about the wife speaking to her husband about how to treat the children is better suited to our case, to our example, to our text, than the mashal in the Medrash Tanchuma, which is about the shushvin, the so-called chaperone who's stepping in to protect the wife? Now that we've collated so many different questions and things to wonder about in Rashi, here's where we begin to explain it. As we've already identified, Rashi has previously explained to us that the word tzav only has one interpretation. It has no other interpretation but l'shoin zeros, when you encourage people to move quickly, to react quickly, to be enthusiastic. Now, logically, if the word tzav means to encourage people to be enthusiastic, then the word tzav surely can only be applied to whoever will actually do what we're about to speak about. So you go back to Parashat Tzav, and it talks over there, tzav, the instruction is very clear. It's an instruction to the Kohanim, tell them to move quickly. Over here, we're about to read about communal sacrifices. Who are we talking to? Who needs to be rushed? Who needs to be enthused? Well, let's think. Who's going to bring the sacrifices? Because of Dilan. This is what bothers Rashi in our Pasuk. This portion we're about to read will talk about the daily offerings and the Rosh Chodesh offering and the Shabbos offering and the Yom Tov offerings, all of which will be done only by the Kohanim, a very small portion of the Jewish community. But the opening line says, instruct, and Rashi has already said instruct means enthuse, get them to be on the ball. Who? B'nai Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. Why instruct the Jewish people if it's only the Kohanim that are going to be doing these things? Surely the more appropriate statement over here would have been, instruct Aaron and his sons. In fact, that's what it says in Tzav, the original Tzav, where Rashi says that it's Lashon Zirus, that it's to get people excited. There it says very clearly, instruct Aaron and his sons, because there it is also talking about service in the Beis HaMikdash. This is what bothers Rashi. How can you use a word Tzav, which has to be linked to actual practical application and action that people will do, how can you apply that to B'nai Yisrael, the whole Jewish people, when you're about to only instruct the Kohanim? Because that's what's bothering Rashi. Therefore, he quotes these words, Tzav es B'nai Yisrael, then explains. Therefore, Rashi says, hang on a second, where are we coming from? Ma omur lemailo. What was just said? What was just said? Moshe said to Hashem, please appoint a successor. To which Hashem replies, you're infusing me, mitzaveni. You're making me enthusiastic. You're trying to get me excited to look after my children. How's about tzave bonai olai? Why don't you get my children excited to serve me? Therefore, this line, Tzavas B'nai Yisrael, is not linked just to what's going to follow about the daily sacrifices. This line is a general message. Tzavas B'nai Yisrael, instruct the Jewish people to be enthusiastically committed to me. The whole Jewish people. This is not linked to one specific mitzvah or one specific service. This is a catch-all for the whole Jewish experience. You want me to be enthusiastic to protect the Jewish people with a good leader? I want you to get the Jewish people to be enthusiastically committed to me across the board. That's Tzav es B'nai Yisrael by Rashi's interpretation. V'lochei nemar l'shoin tzav. K'shem sh'moshe mitzaveini al bonai b'tzivi yifkad Hashem kachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'moshe tzavei es bonai olai. That's why Rashi focuses on this word tzav. Tzav, which literally means instruct. Moshe, you're instructing me about the children, that they should have a good leader. I'm instructing you about the children, that they should have commitment. Or, from the word to be enthusiastically. Right? So, just like you want me to be enthusiastic about getting the best leader for the people, I want you to get the Jews to be enthusiastic to give me the best level of commitment. Secondly, yes, B'nai Yisrael lo rak Aaron uvonav, k'shem shebikesh Moshe yifkoid Hashem al bonai, shebozeh kol B'nai Yisrael shavin, kachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe tzaveh bonai olai, tzivei b'chlal. Now we also understand why the expression is B'nai Yisrael. Why is telling him to instruct the Jews, even though what's going to follow next is only for the Kohanim? Because Moshe was asking on behalf of the whole Jewish community. We want a leader for the whole community who will care for the whole community. Elokei Aruchoi, somebody who can relate to the individuals within the community. So Hashem responds, I would like you to get the commitment of the whole community. And then, and then Hashem says, and I don't only want that to be a theoretical concept, after you get them to be enthusiastically committed to me, there's a system that I would like to put into place, a system of offerings that will translate that commitment into practice. The instruction must result in something that is practical. ומובן שגם המייסה צריך להיות נגיע לכל יסוד פולס הקבונה שיהוד מעשי איך נכח נחס רוח לפונה שמעתי ונעשי רצויני. And even though the action of bringing offerings will only be done by the Kohanim, but it will be done on behalf of the whole Jewish people, and it will be to benefit the entire Jewish people, because nachas ruach Hashem says there's a tremendous nachas, a tremendous satisfaction that I get every time that you bring sacrifices. And that satisfaction is from the whole Jewish people. So what's Rashi saying? Tzav es b'nei Yisrael is not directly linked only to this, the process of sacrifices that will follow. It is Hashem's response to Moshe's request for a successor. And Hashem is saying, get the Jews to be enthusiastically committed and let them express that specifically through bringing these sacrifices. Amnon the Pirish Zeh Kasha. The only problem is that that explanation is all good and fine, but it raises a couple of questions. Number one. Divrei Moshe, Yivkot Hashem Nemer LaKadosh Baruch Hu B'tziva Mitzaveni Al Bonai, V'lochein Ono Yisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzavis Bnei Yisrael Kenal, Eich Yitochen She Moshe Yidaber LaKadosh Baruch Hu B'loshen Kazoi. The whole explanation of Yeh hinges on the fact that Moshe instructs Hashem, Ad Shatom Mitzaveni, Hashem says, you're instructing me about how I should put a good successor in place. How does Moshe give Hashem instructions? How's that even possible? How could Moshe give Hashem instructions? Seems so irreverent. Question one. Question two. Because Moshe Yivkot Hashem Yidavar Amur Chalchikim Am B'nei Yisrael. Moshe's question, his request, please appoint a new leader, is absolutely vital. Without that new leader, how can the Jewish community continue to exist? Moshe himself says it, let the Jewish people not be like a flock without a shepherd. How's Hashem's response relevant or relative? Moshe is asking for something critical. We need a leader, otherwise it's going to be mayhem. And Hashem says, please do something, give me nachas. Nachas sounds like a nice to have. So how do they align? In fact, if you look at the wording, it makes it almost sound like Hashem's need for that nachas is even more important than the Jewish people's need for a good leader. Because what does he say? What does he say? He says, Ad Shatom Mitzaveni. Before you start instructing me, instruct my people. In other words, before you ask for a leader, it's almost like more important to have the sacrifices. How does that work? The leader is a critical component of the continuity of the Jewish people. Nachas for Hashem. It's wonderful, it's beautiful, but how could that possibly be more important? So to address these issues, Rashi says, this is comparable to a parable of a princess who instructed her husband how to deal with the children after she would no longer be there. The specific language over here that describes Moshe as a princess, that implies that he has rank. And Hashem, just as a husband, I mean, it's an incredible thought. Hashem, described without rank, helps everything fall into place. That's why Rashi specifically wants us to look at the parable used in the Sifri and not the parable used in the Medrash Tanchuma, because it won't convey these points. Okay, so we need to understand this. There are three major points. Let's first look at the three major points in the Moshel, and then we'll translate those three major points into the Nimshal, into how it applies to Moshe and Hashem. So let's start with the parable. Number one. The first thing is that when you're talking about a princess who is speaking to her husband, the immediate implication is that she has authority and she has rights. She's a princess and he is just a husband. But the Moshel is very specific. When does she assert this kind of authority? Only when she's about to pass away. And what's at stake is the needs of her children. That's when she asserts herself. As long as it's an ordinary period of the marriage, She conforms to the wishes of her husband, as the pasuk says, "V'hu yimshol boch," that a man has the ability to be able to, so to speak, control his wife. And that's what she goes through the whole marriage. In other words, she doesn't feel the need to assert herself. She's happy to follow whatever he instructs. She's good. She's happy. She doesn't have major demands. But this is a critical period in life. She's about to pass away. It's her last opportunity to assert herself. And what does she have to assert herself about? Children, not just her children, not just his children. She's a princess. These are the king's grandchildren. Suddenly she asserts herself. That's our first insight into this mashal. Somebody who has the ability to use their authority and doesn't until the time is required. That's the first insight. Number two. Habal mevakesh sheishtoi tetzaveh bonav olav loshen shel tzav v'zirus. The second part of the parable is that the husband replies by saying to the wife, please instruct the children and infuse the children that they should be dedicated to me. Kevin shehu bayla stam v'loy melech. Because in this parable, he is in a role of husband. He's not playing the king role. He's playing the husband role. Therefore, there's a concern that the children might be disrespectful to him because they don't see the value. He's just a father. He's just our father. That's all. That's why he has to say to the wife, before you pass away, please make sure that you instill in our children the right kind of value and dedication to me. So what's clear over here is that this particular mashal puts Moshe as the so-called princess into a position with a lot of authority and power, and Hashem in this mashal, as we'll see a little bit later, specifically in a position of less authority and power, which is incredible, and we have to understand why that is. Number three, Atayni ad she'at mefaktatoni chulei paktu bonai olai chulei. The argument the husband says is, while you are, or before you tell me what I need to do for the kids, you need to tell the kids how they should look after me. Let's assume the man in the parable was a king. Well, then the king, if his children would disrespect him, would still have the respect of all of his subjects. But here, we're just talking about in the mashal, in the parable, somebody who is just a husband. All he has is his children. If his children don't respect him, who's going to respect him? Now, these details in the mashal are very specific. Moshe is in an assertive authoritarian position. Hashem in the mashal is, so to speak, in a less assertive position. Almost, if you want, needing help to get the buy-in of the people, of the children. And he's not even, so to speak, a king. That means to say, if the children don't buy in, he has nothing. These details are incredibly insightful into understanding what's going on in this dialogue between Moshe and Hashem. V'aderech zehu banim, so let's take these 3 points and express how they relate to the dialogue and the interaction between Moshe and Hashem. Aleph. Binyan bakoshas Moshe yifkoed Hashem goyim yishalo eid asher yetz lifneim v'yov lifneim goyim yotziyim goyim yaviyim v'loitiyo goyim katzoin asher ein lohem roi'eh. When Moshe stands before Hashem and says, please appoint a successor who will lead them as they go in and as they go out, and who will not allow them to be a flock without a shepherd. But Dovor Zehave Moshe Roye Yisrael. Moshe is not speaking in his private capacity here. Moshe is speaking as the shepherd of the Jewish people, the person who's taken responsibility for the grandchildren of the king, so to speak. In other words, Moshe has the power. When Moshe plays the role of shepherd of the Jewish people, he has incredible power and conviction, and he's very assertive. That's where he turns, it's in this role that he turns to Hashem and says, if you won't forgive the people, take me out of your Torah. Other examples of the same kind of attitude. When he's protecting the Jewish people, he comes from a position of strength, the most humble person who ever lived on earth. But as Roye Yisrael, no pushover. He's absolutely assertive. But He takes a role where he has the power, so to speak. It's almost as if he has greater power than Hashem. Therefore, the mashal is of a princess and an ordinary husband. Because we want to indicate and imply over here that in this particular interaction, Moshe suddenly has power. Now it's the end of Moshe's life. And now he has to hand over the reins of leadership to the next shepherd. And who's the sheep we're talking about over here? Beni Bechori Yisrael. This is not me. It's not about me. Moshe is not speaking for himself. He says, Hashem, you call these people your firstborn child. You call these people your most precious relatives. Mamleches Koyanim, Sorim, you have decided that they should be a kingdom of kings and officers and Koyanim. You've given them all this greatness. I'm not speaking on my behalf. I'm not speaking out of turn. I'm not being chutzpedik. This is your people. That's why the mashal is of a princess, to indicate that Moshe can speak from a position of power when he speaks to Hashem. Because he's speaking on behalf of Hashem's most precious individuals. Number two. Now, from the perspective, remember that that's the perspective of the princess speaking. What does the husband say in return? What about my kids? Who's going to tell the kids to listen to me? Well, we know the history, and we know that the Jewish people, unfortunately, ignored and transgressed multiple times. Sahari HaKadosh Baruch Hu etzlam bedugmas baylos stam. When Jews disregard what Hashem wants, they demote Hashem in their perspective. They don't see Hashem as a king. They see Hashem as the husband, the provider, the one who's going to give me what I need. They don't see Hashem as an authority figure. Therefore, you see that there's a need for Moshe to speak to the Jews and tell them, you can't treat Hashem this way. You can't ignore what Hashem says. You have to recognize Hashem as a king. Therefore, in the mashal, Hashem is not a king in the mashal, because in the mashal, in the parable, Hashem is not recognized by the people. Thirdly, now comes the fascinating part. The father in the story turns to the wife and says, you have to tell the children to provide for me. They have to provide for me. That frames Hashem in a position almost that he needs us to sustain him. As a child would have to provide food for an elderly father, so we have to provide so-called food for Hashem. Over Meila Muvan. So we're not talking about nachas, that Hashem's just looking for nachas. Korboni lachmi. He's asking us to provide his food, his sustenance, so to speak. In other words, the idea that Hashem says to Moshe, tell the Jews to bring me offerings, that is Hashem saying, that will give me energy. It will, so to speak, sustain. And we can't imagine how that is even possible. But that's what Hashem says. We don't understand it, but that's what Hashem says. Hashem says, these sacrifices will be my bread. So the mashal and the way that Rashi chose it is very specific. That's what he wants us to know. He wants us to know it's the mashal as it is in Sifri. And he doesn't use identical words. And he definitely doesn't want to talk about a chaperone. And he doesn't want to illustrate Hashem as a king in this particular context, because Hashem is talking almost from a position over here that the Jewish people don't see me in the right way that they should. And I need for them to provide for me. This teaches us an incredible lesson in serving Hashem. The relationship between us and Hashem is comparable to the relationship between a father and a son. Like the Torah says, Hashem calls us his children. Only us. Only we have this relationship. We have a relationship with Hashem that no other being, whether it's human, animal, angel, it makes no difference. No one else has that relationship. We and Hashem have this unique child-parent relationship. That That bond between us, the parent-child bond between us and Hashem, is eternal and never changes. It never weakens. It never disappears. V'lochen gam ha-korban, she-b'shaychus l'zeh, korban tomid midei yoim b'yoimoy. That's why the offering, which is first on the list, tell the Jewish people to be dedicated. And how should they express it? With an offering that is called tomid. Tomid means constant, consistent. Ofoel ha-nachas ruach lefon ha-kadosh baruch hu chulei, which causes consistent nachas to Hashem. V'zeu kvayochel lachmi shel ha-kadosh baruch hu, and is, so to speak, like this bread which is consistently provided to Hashem. That's the incredible nature of our relationship with Hashem. Hashem has allowed us an opportunity to have a relationship with Him that is absolutely unique, where we, so to speak, add value to Him on a regular, ongoing basis. Nowadays that we don't have the opportunity to bring those offerings, our davening, our prayer service, replaces that opportunity. A person, before they pray, could think, how valuable is my davening? Me? You know how I hack those words to pieces? You know how distracted I am where I daven? Honestly, do you think Hashem cares about my davening? I've got to do it every single day. What's the big deal if I skip it? Skip one time. One time in an ordinary weekday. I skip a mincha. What's the big deal? Does Hashem really need it? That is what Rashi addresses on this pasuk. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bikesh, tzaveyes bonai oloi. Hashem asks, please instruct my children, and tzav, an expression of enthusiasm. Teach my children to be enthusiastic that they should be dedicated to me. That they should come to me daily, every morning and every evening. They should come forward and they should connect with me. And Hashem says, that is like my bread. I'm going to personally enjoy it. I'm going to personally get sustained by it. So that's even more important than having an appropriate leader for the Jewish people, your personal connection with me. And this is true every single day of the year. It could be Yom Kippur or it could be Wednesday. Every single day we are invited to have this incredible intimate connection with Hashem. Every single day when we daven, Hashem says, I have nachas from your davening. He doesn't say from your perfect davening. He doesn't say from your full intention. You get up, you daven, you do your best. Hashem says, that is my nachas, that is my bread. That is the most incredible thing that we could do for Hashem. It is more valuable than having even this amazing successor to Moshe leading us. Can you imagine? That's an incredible thought. And every single day we're invited in to have that relationship. We should definitely use it and use it well.